Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening, thanks for making us a part of your day. Thanks for tuning in via live radio, or also if you missed the show, thanks for downloading our podcasts. Those are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us there, Investing Simplified. If you do the podcast, I would really appreciate it if you would rate and or subscribe to that podcast. It's the only way that we know how we're getting out there, the information that we're getting out there. And I got to tell you, we've gotten some great questions that have come in, but always are looking for more question content from you, the listener, because we want to make sure we're bringing you the info that's applicable to your life and your situation. Unfortunately, right now, we're not able to take live phone calls on the air, as it's just a logistical nightmare. But if you want to have your question answered in real time, just send that to investingsimplifiedradio.com. You can go onto the site there. You can also listen to the show live there, or you can send it to askbo@pfgwm.com. I want to make sure that I'm answering the questions that people have out there, answering the questions that are keeping you up at night when you're thinking about your tax planning, your investment planning, your estate planning, and such. So, you know, when it's me here just talking to you, I can talk into the vacuum. I can talk into the void about what's enjoyable and applicable to me. We could talk about the NBA finals. We could talk about, you know, the baseball playoffs. Those sort of things excite me. We could talk about the fact that, you know, that the market is going kind of bananas lately. And I think that, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster ride that you have to be ready to ride on, right? If you look at the market from the beginning of the year until now, we have gone, you know, quite a trip, right? We started off new all-time highs, then the fastest, sharpest drop that we've had since the Great Depression. Then we had the fastest, sharpest incline in history. So the market rallied back faster than it ever has. And then it got to new all-time highs quickly again, and then retraced a little bit back. And as we finish out this week, you know, here, as we finish out, you know, this quarter, or I guess we're starting a new quarter here in October, technically, you can see that we're in a very similar space to where we were back in February before the COVID crisis caused the market to shut down, before the economy was shut down and the market tanked, right? So we're in a very similar spot from an equity standpoint, from where stock prices are, which, if you watch Fox Business or Bloomberg or CNBC, you will see the technical analysts say, well, it's going to do one of three things. That means, because we're back to that inflection point, you'll hear the terms inflection point or point of control, we are either going to, and wait for it, go up, go down, or stay flat. And the funny thing is, when you see technical analysts look at what's going to happen in the market, those are the three things they say will happen, because those are the three things that can happen with your money, right? And the one thing that we can guarantee in the investment world is that at some point your account will lose value. If you're meeting with an advisor, if you're talking to an advisor, unless you're in an insurance product, a CD, or a money market fund, that is FDIC insured or guaranteed to not go down, you will lose money at some point in your investing life. And it's not the worst thing ever for your portfolio to go down. The key is how much down can you stand? And that's an interesting way to think about that question, because it's not about how much can you stand just from a purely theoretical standpoint. It's how much can you stand and remain invested. And the biggest way that we do that, right, to keep you invested is to have a plan. Because if we can go back to the plan, we can look and say, hey, here's how we need to do over the next 5, 10, 15 years to make sure that your retirement lifestyle is not negatively impacted by the market. Here's how we need to do. It needs to be in this range. As long as you're inside that range, then you're okay. Right? So that it really helps to keep you on track with your investments, because I hear a lot of times people talk about, well, why have a financial advisor? I can just go invest myself and buy the index funds and track the market and just remain invested. And if you can, historically speaking, over the last 10 years, you have outperformed most money managers. Individual investors have outperformed most money managers over the last 10 years, ending in 2018, 2019, and 2020. Do you know why? What happened 10 years before 2018? It was 2008. So if you take that year off, right, we've had the longest, greatest bull market run, and barring little blips here and there, right, little blips being a 37% decline earlier this year. But if you take out those little blips, basically it's been a straight up market, and it's really easy, folks, to make money in the market. It's really easy to make money. The hard thing is keeping your money when you have money invested in the market. And the biggest mistakes that I see individual investors make is buying at the highs and selling at the lows. Because if you're going to buy and hold on for the long term, I continue to repeat myself, it doesn't matter when you buy. If you're buying for the long term and you're buying high quality companies, because if it dips down 37%, if you had bought, let's say, Tesla or Microsoft or Amazon February 19th, and then it declined significantly, if you bought more at the bottom, you are made in the shade right now. So if you're just going to buy for the long term and hold on to it, just buy when you have the money available, right? Because you have the money available, you're investing for the long term. The earlier you get it started, the longer you will have for that money to make money on itself and to have compound interest. But if you're trying to have a plan, trying to figure out how to strategically position yourself and invest your money, then you need to have a little bit more nuance, because you're not going to be able to hold on if you bought February 19th and it went straight down. And then now what are you going to do? Are you selling? Are you going to be able to buy? Are you going to be able to hold on? Are you going to get out at the bottom, which is what most people did in 2008 and what a lot of people did here back in March? Right? Is if you're getting out near the bottom, then you're really, really hurting yourself because you missed out on the upswing back up. But the biggest key, I would argue, is not that you were in poor investments or that you were underinformed. It's that you were not allocated properly to your risk tolerance. Because if you have properly analyzed your risk tolerance, then you know about how much the market's going to go down, about how much your investments will go down in a bear market scenario like we had this year. And if you know that amount and you're comfortable with that amount, it makes it so much easier to hold on and let the market come back. Because historically, over time, the market always does come back. Okay? And so if you are remaining invested in your investments because you have a plan and because you have properly analyzed your risk tolerance, then you're able to hold on through those downturns and through that turmoil. Hopefully you have an advisor that you're speaking with that's talking you through it, that's helping you out and helping you get through all that. And that is where an advisor brings value. That's where a financial advisory team like we have at Price Financial Group brings value. We build out that holistic plan for you. We talk about the pitfalls that are coming and you're prepared for it. And we help you stay invested. Because the biggest key is, folks, you got to stay invested. It's not timing the market, it's time in the market, right? If you're investing in the market. Now, the market is not for everybody. Investing in the market is not for everybody, not especially not for the faint of heart, as we approach the, you know, depth of the election season, as we get closer and closer to an election that is possibly going to be contested, an election that is going to be close, I would imagine, an election that it has a lot to do with the economy and with the COVID crisis. I think that we're going to hear a lot of noise, and that's what's going to move the market as we go forward. But if you have a long-term plan, if you have mapped out your trip, I've used the analogy before, if you have your AAA map, right? If you have your Waze or your Google Maps that has told you exactly where to get there, here's your turn-by-turn directions, here's where to watch out for the cop, here's where to watch out for the potholes, here there's, you know, debris on the road, as that app tells you, then you are prepared for it and you're aware that it's coming and you don't have to worry about it. And if you have a team that you trust to be taking care of you because they have gotten you that confidence that, hey, we can reach our goals, it makes it a lot easier to weather those ups and downs. And rather than just comparing yourself against what the overall market has done or what your neighbor says they have done or what your buddy from the bar says they have done on their investments, I would argue that a lot of times those people say they're very conservative, but they're up 30%, and those two things are not, they don't really add up. Being down, being conservative and up 30%, generally speaking, doesn't really happen in a short period of time. Now, if they bought Tesla stock, you could have bought Tesla at $300 a share. It rocketed up to over 2,000, split down the middle, and then rocketed up again, and you could have made a lot of money. You could have bought Zoom back at the beginning of the year. You could buy these IPOs, but that's not conservative, folks. That's the thing. When you buy individual stocks, generally speaking, that's not conservatively investing. So if you're looking to shoot the lights out with performance, you have to be prepared to ride down the big downslopes. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you just have to be ready to. I like to use the analogy. We help our clients figure out how fast they want their car to drive on this trip, right? And then we set that cruise control for them, and we help maintain it. You think of us as the cruise control that's keeping the car going as fast or as slow as our clients want to go. And we talked about there's different types of risk. There's the risk that you want to take. How fast do you want to drive? How fast do you have to drive to reach your goals? And you kind of trying to figure out, how fast am I driving right now? Does that really match up? And if you haven't really looked at that, haven't had that analysis done, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We'd be happy to give you that analysis. We'll tell you, here's how fast your car is running. Here's how fast you told us you were comfortable driving. And based on what we've talked about and how we've planned out, this is how fast we think you need to drive in order to reach your goals. And if you'd like to do that, give us a call, set up an appointment. You can sit down with myself, with Matt, with our team. Our team reviews everything individually. We look at working on a team together to build out your individualized portfolio and your individualized plan. And that's something, folks, we do as just an offer, a thank you for being a radio listener for folks here in town. So if you'd like to do that, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We'd love to hear from you and talk it through. Again, no cost or obligation. It just takes time. That's the cost, is your time to get that info together. So I'm going to take a break here, and we're going to come back. Joining me today is Jen Singer from the Sold by Jen team. She was very popular segment a few months ago. She's the realtor extraordinaire here in Portland. A lot of people have been asking questions about what does the housing market look like from the perspective of, should I sell? Should I buy? When is the right time to do that? How to invest in the housing market? So if you have a question for Jen, make sure to shoot it over to askbo@pfgwm.com. But stay tuned for more Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for joining us if you're just now tuning in. As promised, we do have Jen Singer from the Sold by Jen team at Keller Williams Portland back on the show by popular demand. Jen, I've been getting a lot of questions coming in from folks about, you know, how does this coronavirus, how is COVID affecting the housing market? What's going to happen with houses? Should I sell my house now? Should I buy? All the questions I'm sure you're feeling all the time. And folks are mostly wondering, you know, is now the time to sell? Is now the time to buy? I know that's the age-old question that realtors have to answer. But, you know, just big picture, what do you see in the housing market in the coming months?
That was a lot of questions.
Yeah, no,
you start by saying thank you for having me back. That was a lot of questions. Where do I start? I'll start at the beginning of what is coronavirus doing to the real estate market. The truth of the matter is that we are spending more time than we ever have in our own homes. And it's a really interesting opportunity of us to see what we love about our homes, what we don't love about our homes. So it's causing a lot of people to move, whether they're moving up or moving down. Our market is here in the Portland metro area. That also includes the Vancouver area. We have a housing shortage. We have an inventory housing shortage. There is not enough houses on the market. So to answer your question about is now the right time to sell? Now is definitely the right time to sell. And I'll give a couple reasons why. It's the time to sell because the only market we know is the market we're in right now. And I don't know. We're not going to talk politics. But elections always play a role in what real estate does. There's a nervous factor that happens, whether it's the person you want that's elected or the person that's not the one you want that's elected. And there's always a nervousness around the election period. And then there's another nervousness during the installation in January of the president. And so what happens is that there's this little flux and people do a little shuffle. And so we're seeing some of that normal shuffle right now in the market.
Sure.
Compounded by COVID, people moving. We also are faced with the fact that people are being told they don't have to go back to work in an office. I've got family that works down at Facebook, and I think they're going to have to go in once a year or quarterly, anywhere between four and once a year starting next year. They can live anywhere they want. And so we still have this influx of people moving to Portland. So is now the best time to sell? I can't promise you that we are at the top of the peak, but I can tell you that it's a really good time to sell, and there is a lot of interest for well-priced homes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so that applies to whether folks are moving out of, you mentioned we're looking at, are we downsizing, are we upsizing? You know, I know there's a lot of difference between if you're selling a starter home, you know, this was your starter home and now you're moving to your forever home, or this was your forever home and now you're moving to a retirement community or something like that. But now across the board, you're saying basically what I'm hearing is there's just not a lot of houses for sale. And so the pickings are slim for buyers. So as a seller, you look really good.
Yeah, as a seller, you're doing really good. There is, excuse me, there is a shortage in all of the homes, right? About the only market that we're not seeing a shortage in is the condominium market.
Okay.
The area, the Pearl District, the South Waterfront, there still is a good amount of inventory in those. But more and more people are looking for a master on the main, or a single story home that they can now realize it's going to be their forever home.
Mm-hmm.
People are looking for maybe less indoor space and a larger outdoor space, even for the downsizing people, that they're looking for a patio. They're looking for a backyard that they can socially distance on and still have friends over, assuming we've got another year of regardless of what science or politics or any of that says, we've got another year before people's individual level of like, comfort. Let's have a whole group of people in our house.
Yeah.
Probably will go back to how it was.
Sure. So yeah. So what you're seeing, you know, are you seeing a lot of people that are looking for homes that have office space as well? You mentioned that before. So, cause I seem to recall, especially here in the Portland metro area, that a lot of the move was they were taking these ranch houses that were built in the 60s and 70s that had these large lots, and then they were getting subdivided and a couple 2-3 story houses were going on to that one lot with very little emphasis on outdoor space. But that makes sense that we'd want to have more outdoor space to escape from whatever this crazy COVID stuff is, right? But also we want to make sure that we have an office space. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely both of those. I mean, we're seeing, I have contractors that I work with every day, and they're building more and more outdoor patio spaces. They're adding more and more heat lamps are at a shortage, if you didn't know.
It was toilet paper,
now it's heat lamps.
Interesting.
So heat lamps, outdoor heat lamps are at a shortage now. And so it's that outdoor space to have people, and then how do you use the indoor space for you, your family, whoever are the occupants of the home. So a home office, a place for your kid to do homeschooling. The biggest thing that's, you know, the variable that none of us know, I wish any of us knew the answer, is the long term, right?
Right.
So we're planning for a lot of unknowns. And so that becomes the time when people, you know, we're kind of throwing pasta on the wall and seeing what sticks. but more people want a home office. More people want a space for their children that's not just their bedroom. They want this outdoor space. And so if you have any of those homes that would fall under any of those categories, you're especially in high demand. Okay. Masters in the Main are the other thing that are in super high demand.
So master on the Main, livable outdoor space, something that could be turned into entertainment space, conceivably outdoor, the socially distanced or physically distanced entertainment space, right? That makes a lot of sense. Okay, and so then what about if I'm looking to sell my home, but now I need a place to live? So am I going to be getting something, you know, for selling the house now, but am I going to kind of be taking it in the shorts on the other end, or?
Wow. Thanks, Bo. okay. So let's talk about, so the challenge becomes that, so for last month, we had 1.3 months of inventory. So if everyone bought that one that was currently looking, it would take 1.3 months. We like to have that number closer to 3 or 4.
Right.
So if you're selling your house, this is where working with the right, person, the right realtor, the right agents, is a really big deal. How do they negotiate that you can sell your house, close on your house so that you have the cash in hand, and then purchase while still occupying your home? So it's called agreement to occupy post-closing. So you have closed on it, meaning that the offer that you write on the new home is not contingent upon your old home selling because it's already sold. It is very difficult right now to get an offer accepted on a house contingent upon you having to sell. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, well, to me. So, I mean, just to kind of break it down.
Sum it up for me, will you?
No. Well, we went through this when you helped Megan and I, you know, move into our house. Where the idea is, used to be when there's a lot of inventory, or not used to be, when we get back to maybe there's a lot of houses for sale, then you don't have to be the most attractive offer necessarily on the board, or you don't have to set yourself apart, and you can have what's called a contingent offer, meaning you're going to buy their house contingent on your house selling. But since there's so few houses and so high demand for those houses, I'd imagine being contingent on your house selling doesn't look as good as coming into that with, hey, I'm ready to buy right now.
Right. So you're asking the person who sells the house you want to buy, you're asking that person to say, we're cool waiting for your house to sell, and we'll just hang out and wait.
Right.
But the truth is, with such low inventory, they probably don't need to do that. There's probably someone out there that will buy their home that isn't going to be based upon, does your home inspection go well? Did your home close? And so it's just not an attractive offer. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I don't want to discourage people. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It's that is the case of why we're having a tough time. I will tell you, 18 years in the business, and I've never had someone end up homeless. So that's a bonus,
right?
That that I've always been able to negotiate and then find them the place that they want to move to next. I had one person come real close for a night, but never had anyone actually become homeless. We've been able to sell their current home for the price that they wanted, make sure that it got closed, and then be able to get them the rent back, usually a free rent back, an occupancy agreement, for them to stay for another 60 days while we have another 30 days to find a home and then get it closed. And so it's the best way to do it, but it does take working with an experienced agent just to make sure that they can get those terms negotiated out for you.
Get the terms that you want for buying. So I know this isn't your bailiwick, but I have had, you know, questions come up because of where interest rates are right now, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, financing your home, looking at refinancing your home, maybe financing an investment property or a vacation property could be an attractive time to do that right now because of where interest rates are.
It is a crazy, ridiculous time. I have multiple clients that are currently moving into a second home down in Black Butte, Sun River, Bend, down to those areas that because they are working from home, for one of them is a professor at a college nearby, and they're moving down there for 9 months, right? When interest rates are below 3%, we've been saying historically low for years now.
Right.
And it's like, no, but seriously, now they're a historic low. And it almost feels comical to keep saying it, but it really is true. Like every time we think it can't get lower, it is.
Right.
So if that's at all on your plate or in your mind, that what would it be like to have a second home? It is a fantastic time to begin investigating that. It starts with a lender. It starts with talking to a lender partner to find out, do you qualify for that second home? How do you make it a vacation home instead of how do you make it a second home instead of an investment property?
Okay.
That's a big deal to have it be a second home, not an investment property.
Sure. Well, especially from the financing standpoint, right? And
correct.
Like I said, it's outside of your bailiwick other than finding that home if people are looking to have that second home.
I mean, I've got clients that are buying homes down in Eugene and Corvallis for their kids because they don't want them in the dorm.
Right.
And it was something they were thinking about doing for their junior or senior year. And instead they're doing it for their freshman or sophomore year, saying, here's your house for the next 4 years. This is what college looks like. So it is a great time. My own family is in that same boat of figuring out where or what that would look like for us.
Sure.
I mean, it's a great time for looking for, if you want that opportunity, I don't know that a more opportune time will come.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So if we're looking at purchasing the house, you shouldn't be scared away by the fact that selling is such a good time right now, because if you're looking, you could, that in your mind, and I'm not, you know, asking you to tell people what to do without meeting with an experienced professional like yourself and sitting down in their own situation. Same caveat I give for all of our investment conversations, but the idea being, don't be scared away by the fact that there's low inventory if you're looking to purchase that second home, because where interest rates are historically low and the kind of deal that you can get on that side of it, on the financing side of it, can really outweigh the fact that you may be overpaying, quote unquote, for that location.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm getting calls every day from people that think their housing pricing has dropped, right? That their house isn't worth what they thought it was. And because of COVID or because of unemployment or what's happening. So it's super important, whether you're looking to do any of this, an investment property, a second home for yourself property, or buying, upsizing or downsizing for yourself, is just about knowing what the market's doing. Right? Just to keep yourself educated so that you know when is that time in your personal timeline to any of those moves, whether that's now or whether that's a year from now or 5 years from now.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So, you know, I know that we're up against a time crunch here with Jen, but I really appreciate you coming on and sharing those those insights. And if people want to get a hold of you, if they're looking to sell, looking to purchase that second home, if they're looking to just, you know, have a conversation about, is this the right time? How do they get a hold of you and your team?
So I'm at, email is Jen, J-E-N, at soldbyjen.net. Jen at soldbyjen.net. Website is soldbyjen.net. And phone number is 503-522-2300. Again, that's 503-522-2300. I think the thing that's cool also that I would throw in there is that just because people are a Portland realtor, we are licensed for the entire state of Oregon. My team's actually licensed for the entire state of Washington as well. But it means that we are still able, that you can use your trusted professional to help you look in a Eugene or a Corvallis or a Bend or a Sun River area. And that makes it really exciting when the process starts. I think a lot of people are also nervous to reach out to total strangers in a city that they don't really know when they're going to do it. So, when you're a licensed agent, you are licensed for your entire state. So that's a cool thing to point out to people too.
Yeah, that's good to know. And especially because your team is, expertise is in the Portland metro area, right? But that doesn't mean that you can't be that professional and do the research and do the searching out for those other areas. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, the number pre-COVID, the number of coastal homes I've sold was ridiculous because that was always where people wanted, and now it's branching out to
further
inland.
So it's changed. You know, and I know I said we're going to try and get you out of here, but this is just an interesting question to me
keep going. I got a few more minutes
before I let you go, but that is that you've seen the move has been more inland to the Black Buttes, the Sun Rivers, that sort of an idea, rather than the coast anymore, or just lately?
I think that the coast is what we consider, I don't know, maybe I'm making this up. I'm born and raised here in the metro area, and spent a lot of time down at the Oregon coast. I think the coast is vacation to us.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, sure.
I think that people go to the beach for vacation. So these second homes are the place that you're not looking to go to for a weekend. We're talking about where you're going to go for the week.
Right. The month or the 6 months or 9 months.
I mean, any of those. But even post-COVID, it becomes that whole question of gosh, that's where we're going to spend spring. We always rent a house in Sun River for spring break, or we always rent a home in Black Butte for spring break. And now it's like, why don't we just own that house?
Right.
And so I think that because there's a lot more flexibility. I've got a cousin who is hanging out with his grandparents at their beach house right now doing schooling down there, right? Sure. You can do schooling from anywhere. My daughter's got a classmate who's in an RV traveling across the country.
Right.
So now that we can be gone for a week at a time, not everybody, we don't all have that opportunity with our jobs or whatever. But if you can be gone for a week at a time, we're okay driving the 3 hours or the 4 hours versus the 50 minutes to the coast.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think we're seeing some of that change to vacation. That's that differentiation between a vacation house and a second
residence. Also, the important differentiation when you're applying for financing.
Correct.
Right. Well, so if you have questions for Jen, if you'd like to have her answer those, we're going to try and get her to be on, you know, be on the show more often than just once every 6 months. But if you have questions, give her office a call, give her team a call. They're happy to sit down with you and discuss options. They helped, like I said, they helped my wife and I in our last two home purchases, and the process couldn't be easier. You have a trusted professional on your side that you go into these negotiations, like she said, the different things that go on with a house that you don't know what you don't know, and to try to expect to be a professional in your profession and in real estate is just silly. So don't go out there, you know, don't go walking in the desert without your shoes on, as it were. Make sure that you have that trusted professional. If you'd like her phone number, you can also give us a call, 503-253-3000, or drop me an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. If you have a question you'd like to have maybe Jen touch on next time she's on, leave it at investingsimplifiedradio.com or askbo@pfgwm. We're going to take a break here and we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining the program, thank you for joining us. If you are, though, you missed out on some great content, I think, from Realtor Jen, who's been in studio with us a couple of times now, answering your questions. I'm hopeful that she's going to be able to come on more often, trying to get that content to you, our listeners, that is applicable to your situation, to your life. As a reminder, we're going to have Steve Anderson on in a couple of weeks here. He is the property tax guru. You may remember from last year about this time and the year before, Chuck and I have had him on over the years. What he does is goes to bat for you if you think that your property tax is more than you should be paying. And he and his team will let you know. And they get paid, in my understanding, and we'll have Steve, you know, clarify this, but they get paid when you get a property tax lowering. So they are incentivized to really help you lower your property tax, and they will not sugarcoat it. They'll tell you whether or not they think they can actually get it done, because it's their time too, folks, right? As they start to look into arguing for you to have less property tax. And I think it's applicable, because property tax is top of mind for a lot of people as it's coming up here in a couple of weeks. I'm hopeful to have him on, if not next week, then at least the week after. So if you have a question for Steve about your specific situation, give us a call, 503-253-3000, or you can shoot me an email at askbo@pfgwm.com, or you can leave it on the text line at investingsimplifiedradio.com, and we'll have Steve answer those property tax specific questions. It's a really big deal, folks. As you remember, with the SALT exemption going down, you only can write off certain amounts of your property tax and your state and local taxes. And being as how we live in Oregon, if you are in Oregon and haven't moved across the river to the no income tax state, but with between the state and property tax, state and local taxes, that can get to $10,000 real quick, depending on how your property is set up or how your home is set up. And so it can make a big difference. If you can lower that, then there's more of a write-off for you on your taxes. So I don't want to take over the tax segment because we don't have the tax animal in today. And I am hopeful we're trying to get our schedules organized with Kevin to get him to come in. But I wanted to talk about some tax things that I have come across in my practice over the last weeks and months that people have brought up and people have been asking about. And I think it may be applicable to your situation. So it's something to definitely start thinking about. And the first is the gifting strategy and the gift tax or the death tax that's here in the state of Oregon. Now, when Taylor's been on, we've talked about the differences between how to set up your trust to, you know, to distribute assets at your death. But the big key with the trust is if you're in a grantor trust or a living trust, the one that you've put the money in, it's not its own entity, so it's still your money. So it's still taxed at your personal level. But if, let's say, you have over $1 million in that trust account, you know, you've invested it, you've come and seen me and Matt, and you've put that, or I should say Matt and I. Now, what is it, Matt and me? Anyway, I get confused about that. But you've come to see us and our team. We've got you set up. Now your money has grown. You've done a great job. Now between your IRA and your Roth IRA and your trust account, you have over $1 million. And then let's say you have a property here and you've worked with Jen and now have a property in Black Butte. Okay, so now your entire estate is more than $2 million. Your spouse has passed away. You have $2 million in your estate and you're looking to pass it on to your kids in the most tax efficient way possible. The number one thing that I have advised my clients that we've talked to our clients about doing is lifetime gifting. So there is a uniform gift tax that applies federally to all gifts given during life or after death. A lot of people focus on that $15,000 tax-free exclusion. So that's a gift that does not apply to the gift tax. And they say, well, I can't give more than $15,000 because then I'll have to be taxed on it. And that's erroneous. And the thing that people may not realize, it's erroneous in two ways. One, it is a taxable gift, yes, above that $15,000, but you don't actually have to pay the taxes on it right now. You can apply your gift tax exclusion to it. So you have to file a tax return, but you don't have to pay the taxes on that gift. So if you had a significant amount of money, liquid money sitting in that trust account, and you want to start gifting that away, maybe you've got a couple of children that are maybe open to receiving some of their inheritance now while you're still alive rather than before you know, after you pass away, you can start gifting them those funds, whether monthly, annually, could do it at Christmas time. You could start gifting them the funds. You could conceivably start thinking about gifting them property. You can do all that gifting while you're alive and apply it towards your federal exemption, which is your lifetime gifting exemption, which currently is a little north of $11 million, about $12 million per person. And it is what is called portable, meaning you and your spouse each have that dollar amount to give away. And that applies to both lifetime during your life and at death. They consider leaving money in an inheritance as a gift. That's why it's not a death tax. It's a gift tax, right? But in the state of Oregon, that limit for your estate tax passing is only $1 million. And that $1 million is not portable per person. So you and your spouse each have your own $1 million exemption in order to pass the money. But you do not get to have his or hers if they pass away before you. Now, the state of Oregon's gift tax is not a uniform gift tax. It's not a lifetime and a death tax. It's only an estate tax at death. So you could conceivably give away $10 million in a year and not have any tax in Oregon. Now, we talked about you'd have a tax federally, so you'd have to pay the tax federally or apply it to your lifetime exemption. But in the state of Oregon, you don't have any lifetime gifting tax. So giving funds away or property away in your lifetime can be a very effective strategy to get some of those funds out of your estate if you are lucky enough, blessed enough to have that much of an estate that it's a problem. It also can really, really help your kids or your grandkids. You can get them set up really well by gifting away the money. Now, maybe it's a home that you've been renting to your kids, or maybe it's a vacation house in Black Butte or a second home. Maybe it's the beach cabin that's been in the family for years and years and generations, and the plan is to leave it to the kids, right? There's all these different items out there that a lot of people are thinking about. Now, the big key and the caveat in there from the tax perspective is the estate tax starts at 10%, goes up to about 16%. That's much less than your ordinary income tax rate, most likely. In the case that you are going to incur income tax to get that money sent over, it may not make the most sense to do it right now. So you want to make sure you are doing a thorough analysis of the tax implications, because if you have an estate that is taxable, it's only taxable above that $1 million, and it's taxable at a relatively low rate. Now, you don't want it to be a giant pain. You don't want it to stay open. You don't want to have to pay the estate attorney and the CPA extra, more than you need to keep that going. But if we can get some of that money out of your estate while you're alive and you get to see your family utilize it, it can be really great. It can be really fulfilling. You can see them be so grateful for what you've given them. You can see them get to enjoy it before you actually pass away, which is a really, really nice thing if you can make it happen. The other thing that I've seen a lot of, and it really worries me as we now move into this new world with the Secure Act, is folks have too much money in their tax-deferred accounts. So when I say tax-deferred, what do I mean? What I mean is they have too much money tied up inside of their IRAs, their 401ks, or their 403bs. So when you pass away, that's a ticking time bomb, because the new rule, and I just dealt with this with a client this week as they were asking about this, the new rule, if you inherit an IRA and you are not the decedent's spouse, you no longer get to stretch that IRA over your lifetime. You have to take those distributions out of that account. You have to fully liquidate that IRA within 10 years. Now, that doesn't mean you have to take out any particular portion at any particular time. You have 10 years in which to remove all of the funds from that account. And if you are leaving that IRA, conceivably, possibly to your children who are professionals, who are maybe in the peak of their earnings years, that can be a real burden for them tax-wise. In order, you know, they inherit that money. Now they've got to take it out of the IRA. Now they have required minimums, you know, out of the IRA. It's not a required minimum distribution, but they're going to have to take it all out over 10 years. And if they're making good money, maybe they take a tenth out each year, 10%. But if you have $1 million IRA, that means they have $100,000 extra of taxable income. Now, let's even expound upon this further. Let's say that you are really healthy. You've done a really good job and you're living well into your 90s. And maybe your kids who you're leaving this IRA to are in their 60s, maybe even 65. Maybe they're on Medicare because now they're 65 and they've started Medicare, whether or not they're still working. And now this IRA that you're leaving them is not only pushing them into a tax bracket from a tax perspective, but it's now making their Medicare premiums go up. There's a lot of different implications that come from having all this money set aside into this IRA and passing it to your heirs. Now, the other side of it is when you hear that, maybe you say, well, I'm not really worried about leaving it to them. They're getting, this is this huge windfall they're going to get, and they're going to just have to deal with some taxes. That'll be fine. And that's a fair point. The other side of it is, you know, why didn't I use a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k whilst saving money? And the argument that I hear is, well, I'm getting the tax deduction now and I'm going to be making less money in retirement. So my tax rate's going to be lower. And that's entirely possible. It absolutely could be lower. I don't personally know where tax rates are going to be 20, 30 years from now. But if you ask most people to be intellectually honest about where they think tax rates are going to go in the future, I would argue that you will not hear a whole lot of folks say that they think tax rates are going to be lower. Now, that's not a political statement. That's not about who may or may not win the election this fall or who may or may not win the election in 4 years or in 12 years or whenever. It's about the fact that we have historically low tax rates and have had them for a little while now, but the tax rates are historically low. And so if you are taking the deduction now, thinking that your tax rate's going to be lower when you retire, that's kind of a tough gamble to take considering where tax rates are. And that's just purely from the tax rate perspective, right? So if we're not just thinking about, so we think about the tax rate perspective, here's how much, you know, we're going to have coming out, how much income we're going to have. And so this is our income rate. But think about it from the idea of how much money you're going to have. And I'll use the analogy, you know, that applies, you know, I actually stole this from from a colleague of mine, but he works primarily with farmers and folks that do a lot of farming work. And the question is, when you're thinking about it this way, so you're going to put that dollar away and get to write it off, but it might be worth $10 down the road that you're going to have to pay taxes on, okay? So the analogy I use is, would you rather pay taxes on the seeds or on the harvest? And I think I'd rather pay taxes on the harvest, right? Now, it takes a little bit more effort. You've got to figure out how much money can I get into the Roth. They cap the amount that you can put into the Roth. But Roths, to me, are the thing that everyone should have. If you don't have one, and you may not know how to get one started, you can give us a call. If you don't have one because you say, I can't afford it, I think we could do some maneuvering and look for a way that you can get that money into a Roth and start it now. Because the other thing we've talked about a lot of times is that five-year rule on the Roth. That's from it being open, having a dollar in there. So I've had a lot of clients where I've said, hey, I understand you don't have a whole lot of money to get started, you know, investing. We don't have a whole lot of money to get started in that Roth. But let's at least, at the very least, let's get started with that Roth. Go down to the bank, open up a Roth savings account, and put $10 in there. Okay? So then the Roth is open. It's been open for 5 years. Now you have satisfied that five-year rule, and now when you can start putting more money in. Now, ideally, you're putting a lot more money in. I've made the estimation before. I've run this on a spreadsheet and talked to a lot of clients about. But conceptually, it's a little harder on the radio. But if you think about it, if you fully fund a Roth, so let's use the scenario. Everything is equal. We have the same rates of return, the same market conditions, the same everything, right? If you start funding a Roth, fully funding that Roth, the maximum contribution at age 20, you fully fund it and it's fully invested and it's earning, you know, a rate of return. You know, we could use whatever rate you want to use. Let's say it's earning 5%, and stop at age 30 and just let it run until age 65 when you retire, versus starting at age 30, fully funding that Roth, continuing to fully fund it. Once you hit 50, now you can put more in. So there's the catch-up amount. So now we're going to continue fully funding that till age 65. So fully funding a Roth for 10 years, fully funding a Roth for 35 years. Which account do you think has more money on your 65th birthday? The first one. And it's crazy. It's crazy to think about. I've put in so much less money. But it's about the time. We talked about time in the market earlier. It's about the time for that compound interest. It's the basics of compound interest. Now, I understand most of you listening are not 20 years old. Say, hey, thanks. That would have been great. I could have done that a long time ago. But it's about saving. It's about the more money that you can save, that you can put away now, the better off you'll be. And I would argue the more money you can put into a Roth that's going to grow tax and come out tax-free, the more seeds you can put in there, the earlier on, that means the harvest is going to be better. But the more seeds you can put in there, the more harvest you can have tax-free. And here's the big thing. When you leave that to your kids, or when you leave that to your wife, or when you leave that to your nieces or nephews, or when you leave that to a charity, well, let's leave charity out of there because they get it tax-free anyway. But when you leave that to your heirs, that Roth is tax-free for them as well. So I just don't understand why you wouldn't use a Roth as soon as you can. Now, I know they weren't around a long time ago. They really came into vogue in the mid to late 90s, and they started increasing the contributions. But the really cool thing that's out there right now is the Roth 401k or a Roth option in your 403b. So if you're listening right now and you don't know for sure whether or not you have that option, please check. Because at least start putting some, and again, I got to put the caveat out there always. I did this with Jen earlier. I do it with Matt every time he's in. Please take this with a grain of salt and consult your individual investment professional, your tax professional, to make sure this applies to you. But in my opinion, if you have a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b option at work, you should be taking advantage of it. And the question comes up a lot. Does that mean I get rid of my match? And the answer is no. And here's the great thing. If you're participating in your Roth 401k, your match from the company goes into your traditional 401k. So now you're not making a bet on whether taxes are going to be higher or lower. You're not making a bet on what the world's going to look like. You are going to have a tax diversified retirement plan because you're going to have Roth money. You're going to have traditional money, you know, tax deferred money. And hopefully you're working with a team like ours and you have some taxable money set aside as well. And so now when you go into retirement, we can turn on your Social Security. We can turn on any pensions or annuities that you might have. And then we have options for your liquid money to plan for how to get that money to your heirs the most tax efficient way possible. Also, how to get that money to maintain your retirement lifestyle in a tax-efficient way. So to me, a Roth is the most underutilized option that's out there for folks. And as I'm talking this through, I say, well, it wasn't around, you know, it wasn't always around, but I mean, that's 20-something years ago. So you could have been contributing to a Roth for the past 20-something years. If you can't contribute to a Roth, consider Roth conversions. I know that I talk about this all the time, but consider it, especially with tax rates the way they are, with the incentives that are out there, consider the Roth conversion. Because when your kids inherit that traditional IRA, they cannot convert it to Roth. So there's no way for them to get the taxability out of that account. And, you know, for me, my number one goal is to make sure that my clients can live the retirement lifestyle they want. But my number one A goal is to do that in the most tax-efficient way possible. Because I don't mind paying my fair share of taxes, but I don't want to pay more than my fair share, and I don't want to pay somebody else's share. So if you can save money on taxes while maintaining your retirement lifestyle, I think that's just a win-win. All right. Well, you know, that's about my time, you know, for today. So I really appreciate you listening. I really appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate the kind words that folks have sent on the text line and via email. But if you have a question, a specific situation you'd like us to cover, if you have a question for Matt, the CIO of Price Financial Group, for Taylor, our estate planning extraordinaire attorney, if you have a question for Kevin, the tax animal, or any of the other guests that we have on here, or if you have a suggestion for the type of question that needs to be answered, please shoot those over to askbo@pfgwm.com. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for tuning in. I'll leave you with what I like to do every week and every show. Be kind to each other. Be safe out there. We will get through this together. God bless you all, and thank you so much for listening. This has been Investing Simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Operated.